Right before I leave, want to tell you Campus Walk Service is part of the Community Service Unit, a student-run organization under the auspices of the SUNY Department of Public Safety. And Campus Walk Service provides safety escorts to and from points on campus 7 nights a week between the hours of 8 p.m. and 2 a.m. Call 246-8228 or 68243 from campus telephones only, or visit the Walk Service headquarters in room 1311 in the Music Wing of the Fine Arts Building. That number again, 246-8228. I'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Eric Corley. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
Hello.
Is this Mr. Van Vliet?
Yeah.
The shiny piece of pot. If you've got ears, you gotta listen.
Hi, this is Mike Bifoco. On Tuesday, April 3rd, from 7 to 9 p.m., I hope you'll join me and co-producer Tom Pomposello for a special presentation. If you got ears, you gotta listen. A radio show about Captain Beefheart. We'll be featuring exclusive interviews, music and poetry of Don Van Vliet, better known as Captain Beefheart. Joining us also in the studio will be Gary Lucas, guitarist and manager for Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band. So be here for a rare profile of a most remarkable artist. That's Tuesday, April 3rd, from 7 to 9 p.m., right here on WUSB-FM. 90.1 in Stony Brook.
Hi there, this is J.C. Lodge, and whenever I'm in Long Island, I listen to WUSB Stony Brook.
The Ministry of Truth.
Crazy day, weather-wise, anyway, as I turn down the music. Ah, that's better. Well, good evening. This is the first episode, I guess you'd call it, of the Ministry of Truth, and we're going to do all kinds of exciting things tonight. We want you to call us. Our phone number is 246-7901. Tell us what's on your mind, what's happening in your life, and what kind of fun things you've been up to today. It's really crazy out there. The weather, it's a little bit above freezing, but it's not going to stay that way. It's going to go down, and the roads are going to freeze, and all kinds of fun things are going to be happening. Taking a look at the National Weather Service forecast for our area here. Okay, snow will continue. If it hasn't started yet, it will do that too. It'll mix with sleet and rain before tapering off to flurries very late at night. I'm expecting another 2 to 4 inches around here. And snow accumulations as of about 5 p.m., 3 to 6 inches right about where we are. And a little less on the south shore of Long Island, but they've been getting all kinds of flooding and nasty things happening to them. Yep. Let's see if I can find one of these reports. Ah, yes. Well, police say two lanes of the Bell Parkway are closed due to flooding between 65th Street and Bay Parkway, if anyone happens to be listening out there. In Connecticut, about 40 people have been evacuated in National Guard trucks from the coast-hugging Fairfield Beach Road in Fairfield, which is about 10 miles west of Milford. Fire Department Captain William Schumann says most of the evacuees are Fairfield University students. Anyone from Fairfield University, give us a call. Our phone number is area code 516-246-7901. And we'd like to hear what happened to you today. Westport police report no evacuations, by the way, but they're readying their crews for possible nighttime flooding at a peninsula development called Sagatuck Shores. And while the storm has brought mostly high winds, rain, and sleet to the coastline, as much as 6 inches of snow is predicted to cover interior sections. And forecasters predict up to 10 inches in northwestern Connecticut Berkshires. Oh, boy, what a lot of fun this is. And what's this? Oh, a flooded fire in South Jamesport. Yes, right here on Long Island. Flooded roads delayed firefighters in getting to a home on Long Island's North Fork. And when they got there, they had to stand in 3.5 feet of water to fight the blaze. But it was no use. The house was gutted. Luckily, though, no one was hurt. John Wowak of the Jamesport Fire Department says it took firemen 15 minutes to reach the burning house instead of a routine 2-minute response. The two-story wood frame home on Willow Street was engulfed in flames when firemen arrived. More than 50 men from 7 fire departments responded, including the U.S. Coast Guard and 2 amphibious vehicles. And meanwhile, 50 residents of South Jamesport, a tiny town on the Peconic Bay, have left their homes to spend a dry night at the firehouse, Wowak says. Other residents are staying at the community center on South Jamesport Avenue. Well, if there's something really wild happening in your neighborhood right now, like cable TV is out or the phone isn't working, well, no, I guess if your phone isn't working, you can't call to tell us about it, but if the electricity is out, you could be listening to us on battery, or if trees are falling left and right, give us a call. We'd like to see what's going on out there. 246-7901. I was driving in this morning, and I had a kind of a fun incident coming up one of the main roads that lead to this place. Found myself suddenly going sideways, which isn't all that good a thing to do inside a car when you're moving on a busy street. So I did panic for just a minute, but didn't last too long. I was able to steer into what I was sliding towards, which is the best thing to do. They say when you're skidding, don't put on the brakes and don't try to get out of it. You go with it, and things tend to work out. Well, I see one of our phone lines is ringing. Let's see who this is. USB, you're on the air.
Eric Corley, hi, how are you?
Hi, who's this?
Oh, this is Dave.
Dave, hi, how are you?
Good. Were you asking a question and taking responses?
I'm not asking a question, just seeing what people are up to.
Oh, well, I'm just finishing with work, about to go out and brave the chilly and freezingly sleety weather.
Uh-huh. You're driving a car, I assume.
Oh, unfortunately, yes.
Well, have you had any wild experiences today?
Do I have any wild experiences? Well, nothing really. It's my job to call radio stations to compile top 40 playlists, and somebody pronounced the band Eurythmics the Arithmetics, so that was pretty unusual. But
uh-huh.
Other than that, no, nothing really strange has happened.
Well, that's pretty amazing. I was just curious as to what the conditions are like. I was driving this a little while ago, and it was really pretty messy. It's starting to sleet again, and it's very slippery. It's about to glaze over. I was wondering if... Are you out... Where are you?
Well, I'm in a building. I'm not exactly outside.
Yeah.
I'm not at a payphone or anything.
I may know more than you, actually, on that.
But it's very slippery. very quickly. Uh-huh. And if it goes below freezing, I'm worried that there'll be lots and lots of accidents out there, because it seems that bad weather draws the worst drivers.
Yeah.
They stay home when it's sunny, but when it's not bad out, that's when they decide
to people do weird things sometimes. I was on my way in today, I was in back of a Corvette doing 20 miles an hour, which never happened to me before.
Yeah, you assume that a car like that or a Trans Am is going to always go fast.
Right. But what really bothers me, I think, more than anything, is when people ride on their brakes, and you're in back of somebody, and you just keep hitting the brake for no reason at all. You know, they're on a straightaway, there's no one in front of them, the road's perfectly
really
clear,
dangerous.
And they just decide to hit the brake. I don't know if they're testing it, or you know, they just want to see what I'm going to do, but it's really annoying, and I think that kind of thing leads to more accidents than speeders.
Probably, because you slam on your brakes when the roads are in this condition, and you're just not going to stop, you're just going to slide.
Right.
Leads to so-called fender benders.
Did you ever do that?
Oh, sure, plenty of times.
You slid, huh?
Sometimes you just can't help it. You know, you have to slow down somehow, and even when they say you're supposed to pump the brake.
Uh-huh. And, I never know what that means. I certainly don't know what that means when I'm sliding somewhere.
When you're what somewhere?
When I'm sliding around on the street, I don't think about pumping brakes or that kind of thing.
Life story in front of you?
Well, I can't really say here what goes through my mind, but...
I see trees and the backs of people's fenders.
Trees? Oh, yeah, well, you're looking at the real picture, I guess.
Right.
I don't know what I... It happens so fast, you know, the whole thing takes about 2 seconds, and it's over. Now, this happened to me once before. I was on William Floyd Parkway coming up, and there was a nice little layer of ice on the road, which I hadn't been quite aware of, as it was... I believe it was the first frost of the year. It was... maybe November, early November. Well, I was going down this road, and I just came to the end of William Floyd Parkway, going to Route 25A, and I just applied the brakes lightly, you know, to make the merge into the lane. I suddenly found myself spinning like a top, and it was really amazing. But that time I didn't make the right decision, because I kept my foot on the brake.
Yeah.
I guess it's harder to take your foot off the brake when you start skidding than it is not to put your foot on the brake when you're skidding.
Yeah, it's true. It's just the body reacts, and it takes a bit for the bit of time for the mind to catch up.
Yeah, so I was lucky that time. There weren't any cars, and I just sort of like slid into the grass in between the two, the division in the highway. I didn't really, you know, dent anything. So
you were lucky that time, but it made you a better man for the experience.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure.
Unfortunately, I hear that the Masuo concert has been canceled.
Yeah, that's true. Yoshiaki.
Just postponed.
It's postponed. We don't know till when, but when we do, of course, we'll announce it.
And I was hoping, because I heard this morning on the airwaves that come rain or come shine, Masuo was going to be just like the post office.
Yeah.
That the show was going to go on. So I'm a bit disappointed, but I guess you know, you don't want people coming out and getting in trouble in the bad weather.
No, that's true. Although I look at it as kind of fun, you know. It was great last night hearing the wind and the rain and snow.
I love being, you know, late at night.
Lights flickering and, all kinds of fun things happening.
Yeah.
It took me about 45 seconds this morning to get a dial tone, too, which was a lot of fun. Dave, we're going to be calling not only a presidential candidate or the presidential candidate's... election campaign officer, but we're also going to be talking to we're going to try to talk to a former president. We have all the right numbers and everything. I want to first of all tell the folks that the number is 246-7901 if they want to talk to us, you know, make comments, that kind of thing. Area code 516. But I wanted to ask you if there's anything that you'd like to say to either this guy who's... agent we're going to be talking to, Lyndon LaRouche. Have you ever heard of him?
LaRouche?
Yeah.
What's his first name?
Lyndon, as in Johnson.
That name sounds extremely familiar.
He's running for president.
Is he on the Socialist or the Communist Party ticket?
Believe it or not, he's on the Democratic ticket.
Ah.
Yeah. I don't know. We're going to find out more about it when we call up the guy around 6:30 or so, and we'll see just what he's up to. If people want to ask us questions, they're free to do that, 246-7901. But we're also going to try to call Gerald Ford later on. He's out there in California somewhere. And
Do you have the phone number to the golf course?
We have the phone number to someplace. We don't know exactly where it is, maybe a payphone or something, for all I know. But if there's anything you want me to say to Gerald Ford for you, please let me know now.
Yeah, just ask him how Betty is.
Okay, how's Betty? I'll try to remember that.
Okay, thanks, sir.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye. 246-7901 is our number. USB, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to give you some road conditions.
Okay, go ahead.
I live right next to Route 347. I look out the window and people are going about 25, 30 miles an hour.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah, they're just kind of zipping by here.
Considering. Wow.
I came from Plainview at 4:30 and it took me my normal 35 minutes.
Wow.
I don't know what nobody's talking about here.
How's the expressway doing?
I don't know. I take Northern State.
Uh-huh.
All the way from 110, come all the way down 347.
Yeah, they got that all cleared up?
All cleared up. People were driving along at 50 miles an hour.
Wow.
Now, the only problem we got is when it turns to ice, we're in trouble.
Yeah, that's true. Well, tell me, is there anything you'd like to say to Gerald Ford?
Anything I want to say to Gerald Ford.
That we can say on the air, that is.
Actually, no, there's nothing I'd like to say to Gerald Ford.
Okay, well, we'll pass that along to him if we get a hold of him today.
That's about it. That's about what you can say to him. It's almost nothing.
Okay, well, thanks for calling, and thanks for the road conditions.
Hey, no problem.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
246-7901 is our number. The Ministry of Truth is the program. USB, you're on the air.
Turned out. I'd like to know if Nelson Rockefeller was really Gerald Ford's vice president.
Yes, he was for a little while. Let's see, how did that work again? Nixon, all right, you had your Nixon and you had your Agnew. Agnew got out and Ford got in. Then it was Nixon and Ford. Then Nixon got out. Then Ford went up. And Ford, I think, was the one who picked Rockefeller. Is that how it works? Yeah, that's how it works. So Ford picked Rockefeller as his vice president, and that's the way it went.
Wow, I must have been dazed and confused.
Well, it does happen. I mean, it wasn't a very long time that he was vice president. Of course, he's dead now, isn't he? Yeah. Did you know that?
No, I think I was just dazed and confused.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Stony Brook.
Ah, Stony Brook. Well, have you seen what it's like outside recently?
You know, I've tried to just ignore what's been going on outside as much as possible.
You know what's great about this storm? It hit everybody by surprise. No one knew it was coming. Did you know it was coming?
I didn't know it was coming at all. I mean, the day before, it was a gorgeous spring day, and I was really looking forward to the beginning of spring.
It was. 2 days ago, I remember
now
walking around.
No.
Yeah, well, April is coming. April snowstorms and whatever else the saying goes. Yep. Okay, well, thanks for calling us.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
246-7901 is our number. I see a caller just gave up. Ah, he's back again. Here we go. USB, you're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to ask a question to Gerald Ford.
Go right ahead.
My question is that, how could he have pardoned Richard Nixon if Richard Nixon had not been accused or tried of any crime?
Ah. He wasn't accused of, is that correct? He wasn't accused of a crime?
He
wasn't
time,
convicted
he
of a crime.
He had not been accused or tried of any crime.
Uh-huh. Well, that's something I have to think about. Okay. How could he have pardoned him? Are you saying...
Abstract.
Are you saying that Nixon shouldn't have been pardoned or he shouldn't have been...
Not at that time. If Ford had felt that he should have been pardoned, perhaps at a later date, but, you know, at that time, maybe it just would have made Ford look really bad, so he figured he'd do it, earlier.
He jumped the gun then, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll definitely pass that along to him. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Gray College.
Gray College, that's on the campus at Stony Brook, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, what's the general sentiment on campus towards these politician people?
I don't know. I think it's a feeling of deference.
Of what?
I don't think the people, general apathy.
General apathy. But isn't that the feeling on this campus towards everything?
I really can't judge.
You're a perfect student, I can say that much. Okay, well, thanks for the question. We'll pass that along to Jerry if we get a hold of him. Is there anything that you want to ask this this other candidate that we're tracking down, Lyndon LaRouche? Have you heard of Lyndon LaRouche?
No.
You haven't?
No.
So was there anything you want me to ask him as an unknown?
Ask him why doesn't he get some media coverage?
Uh-huh. You think he's the one not getting himself media coverage?
Well, I haven't heard of him before tonight. I guess this is media coverage, but...
In a sense. Okay, well, thanks for calling us.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. 246-7901 is our telephone number. Area code 516. If you have any questions or comments about life or anything that's happening, here's something that happened today up in Westchester. New York Telephone Company says between 9 a.m. and 12 noon today, people in Larchmont had some problems receiving incoming calls. Tony Papas, the phone company spokesman, said the company does not know what caused the problem, which affected about one quarter of the incoming calls. Papa said it was probably not weather-related, and it was cleared up around 12 noon. But, of course, this would never have gone on our wire services if it wasn't for the weather, so, in effect, it was weather-related. It's 20 minutes after 6 o'clock, and it's Thursday night, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, the Ministry of Truth. I'm Eric Corley. I'll be with you until 7 o'clock, at which time we have Curtain Up, which is our Broadway soundtrack program and that kind of thing. I'm thinking of calling Jerry Ford now. If anyone else out there, calls are being screened now, I think. Well, if anyone else is out there and they want to ask Jerry a question, we're going to try our best to get through to him. Our number is 246-7901, area code 516. And it's still 2 degrees here in Stony Brook. Yep, 2 degrees Celsius. That's 36 on the Fahrenheit scale. And, well, maybe we should just go for it. What do you say? Okay, let's do it. We're going to pick up the phone. Whoops, not quite like that. And we're going to dial this number. I'm going to keep talking over the number so that someone can't hear how many dials I'm dialing and figure out what the number is that way. It just won't happen. In fact, I even dialed a couple of extra digits to fool you. Oops. Uh-oh.
Well, sir, your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again. We'll call your operator to help you. This is a recording, 5163C.
Hey, operator, what's going on here? That shouldn't happen. I'm going to try that again. It's possible that an error was made by the phone company. They have been making a few lately. Ever since this breakup of AT&T, I don't know what to expect. Here we go. It's the same thing. Get Lee in here. Lee's the person who found this phone number, and apparently it doesn't work. Well, okay, I know where the place is. It's called Rancho Mirage in California. What I'm going to do now is call information out there and see if they can tell me what the exchange is. And if it matches with the exchange I have here, then I'll know that... something is going on. Let's see if we can do that. Sometimes you have to convince them to give you this this information, even though they're supposed to. This is a free call, by the way. Although it's likely they'll be charging soon for information to such foreign states.
Hello, what's it, please?
Hi, operator. We're looking for an exchange in Rancho Mirage. I was wondering if you could tell me what exchanges are local to that place.
Okay, certainly. One moment, please.
Thank you. I got a nice operator here.
Okay, we have 346-568-340. 324, I see 328, it's just kind of jumping all around here.
Uh-huh.
But that seems to be predominantly what we have.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, you're very welcome.
Bye-bye now.
Those are all area code 619, by the way.
Oh, that could account for the problem.
I'm able to help you with that today because they're slowing, or they've had a problem with 619, and we've been asked to help them out.
Is 619?
It is a 619 area code.
Is that a new area code?
Yes, it is. New to last year.
I see. So when did the calls to 714 stop working for that, those exchanges?
Last year, almost the middle of last year.
Uh-huh. Okay, that certainly accounts for it then.
Thank you. In other words, if you have a number, use the 619 area code and you will get right through.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Bye now.
Bye. Forgot to ask her how the weather was. She was a nice operator. Yeah. Wow. This one I sort of reeled in that a little bit. Okay. So we had the wrong area code. Now, all kinds of area codes are popping up where none existed before. In fact, New York City is going to be changing soon. Queens and Brooklyn and Staten Island will be area code 718. Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, enough about that. Jerry's waiting for us. Let's see what he has to say. Our phone number, by the way, 246-7901, area code 516. Anybody can call us and talk. It's a free country. His phone is ringing.
Cousin Ford's office.
Yes, hi, is Mr. Ford in?
No, I'm sorry, he's not.
Oh, he's not. Do you know when he'll be back?
He will not be back in the office until next week.
I see. Do you know where he went?
Yes, I do, but I'm not allowed to give that information out.
Oh, I see. Okay, this is his office, then?
Yes, it is.
Okay, fine. All right, then, we'll try again some other time. Thank you. Bye. That was his office. It wasn't his home, it was his office. I wonder where he went for a week. They can't tell us. Interesting. Very interesting. Well, did Lee leave? Where is he?
In the record library.
Ah, maybe he's listening. I need him to get me a line so that I can call this presidential candidate type person, Lyndon LaRouche. Maybe I should tell you a little bit about him first. Looks like there's a phone call. Hold on, let me get to this phone call first. I hope this is a phone call. USB.
Yes, hi. I found an article, and that might be interesting to you and the listeners.
Okay.
In New Age magazine, January 84, in reference to the upcoming primary.
Are you calling from a very hollow room?
Actually, I was speaking in a bathroom.
Okay.
That's pretty hollow.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
Stony Brook.
Okay.
On campus.
Great. Tell me what you want to tell me.
All right. I don't know if anybody remembers Wavy Gravy, but he launched a campaign for Nobody for President, and he's doing that again.
Nobody will solve inflation, that kind of thing.
Well, the new ones are that nobody has ratified the nuclear freeze or brought peace to our time. Nobody totally understands the economy. Nobody loves you. the guy, Wavy Gravy, has named himself Nobody's Fool. I thought that was appropriate for the upcoming primaries.
Now, how long has this ticket been in effect?
You're talking about this presidential?
Yeah.
Presidential. Well, this is in January's edition, so I assume at least for, you know, half a year or so.
I heard it last election.
You heard the last election also?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was a couple of elections ago.
Well, maybe it was. That's possible, too.
Uh-huh.
Well, that sounds good. Is there anything you'd like us to ask this? Have you ever heard of Lyndon LaRouche before?
No, to be honest with you, I haven't. And do I have anything to ask him? Why wasn't he at the Iowa debate?
I'm sure he wanted to be.
Yeah, I'm sure he did, too.
I was talking to somebody from his office today, and they were telling me about how all these unfair things have been happening to them, and how the League of Women Voters, who, by the way, they call the League of Women Vultures, wouldn't let them participate in any debates anywhere, and they exclusively barred them. I've got a couple of news items I'm going to read about him. So I'll read those over the radio. Thanks for calling.
Just one other question.
Yeah.
Is he a bona fide Democratic possibility?
Well,
is he a write-in?
He, I believe, is on the ticket. Is he on the ticket?
In Pennsylvania and California.
In Pennsylvania and California,
not
I'm told.
New York, maybe some other place.
Yeah, they From what I hear, they expect to take Pennsylvania. We'll talk more about that later, but...
It's his home state.
It sounds interesting.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Bye now.
Take care. USB, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, what are you talking about? The hog farmer?
What was that?
The hog farmer?
What did you say? Could you say that one more time slowly?
Woodstock? Are you talking about Woodstock?
I'm not talking about Woodstock, no. You want to talk about Woodstock?
I want to talk about anything. I want to talk about the presidential candidates.
Okay, go ahead.
I think that that Ronald Reagan is the overall winner and that this Democratic charade that these guys are putting on is ridiculous.
Okay. What makes you say that? Just because of all this infighting in the Democratic Party?
Because how could Jesse Jackson be taken serious? This guy don't know nothing about foreign affairs.
How do you know that?
Huh?
How do you know that? He went over to Syria and he brought back a prisoner.
Well, you know why? Because he was funded. He was funded by them. Did you know that?
By the Syrians?
I heard Ira Postel was suggesting that on WABC.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of believe it. Where does he get all his money from his campaign? And I also want to know what church is he a reverend of?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that myself. If someone else does, they can call in. But where does anyone get their money from?
Well, at least Ronald Reagan gets it from good sources like big business. But where is he getting it from? And if he's a reverend, a Christian reverend, and he's supposed to stay out of politics, according to the Bible. So I want to know, what is he a reverend of? What church?
Uh-huh. What do you think of the other candidates?
Hart?
Yeah.
What do I think of the other candidates?
Yeah.
I don't like either one of them. Carter, Mondale, the same thing. That guy stinks. And Hart, who is this guy? He came out of nowhere. I don't like their whole political thing, you know?
Uh-huh.
They're getting rid of missiles and stuff like that because, we're from different, you know, like, we can say we're getting rid of them, but the Russians won't. And they say they make fun of Ronald Reagan for this archaic belief that, you know, the Russians are behind everything. But they are. Just like with Grenada, yeah, they said don't invade it. But when we go there, they got their workers there, construction workers with guns. How come our construction workers don't have guns?
that's a good question. Well, you think the invasion of Grenada was justified then?
Yeah.
Because of what? What was happening there that needed an invasion?
Why were Russians down? Russian construction workers and advisors down there.
Wasn't it Cuban construction workers?
Yeah, but they also got a Russian diplomat was down there in Grenada.
Uh huh.
And we're not close to their country, you know. They're always over here in our hemisphere, and it can't be accepted anymore. You see, them guys, they like Kennedy and all, but Kennedy, Kennedy had one of the biggest defense budgets out of any president. And he also kicked the Russians' asses out of Cuba, too, right?
Did he?
These guys wouldn't stand for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mondale can never be forgiven for the Iranian thing, because he was involved in that.
What do you think should have been done as far as that goes?
He should have moved quick. You never see him taking any Russian embassy hostages anywhere in the world, do you?
No, but then again, I don't see too many other American ones being taken hostage either.
He shot a guy in France, didn't they? Killed him?
That was a British envoy, I believe. Well, they're shooting people all over the place. You know, I think your nationality really doesn't enter into it as far as who's going to get shot.
I know, but it seems that the people, like when in East Germany, then when they pick any Americans,
uh-huh.
West Germany, right? They pick the Americans, and the chairman himself said that they're picketing the very people that allow them the right to picket. And these people don't understand that around the world. They have the wrong people, the anti-American, you know? Around the world.
Uh-huh. Let me just break in for a second to give out our phone number, 246-7901. I'd like to ask you one more thing. You seem to be in support of Mr. Reagan. What do you think of him? Is he doing a good job? Is he going to be reelected?
I hope so. If not, if he has to step down, I'd vote for Alexander Haig.
If he's not running.
I know, but if Reagan had to step down, uh-huh. That's who I would back.
Okay.
That guy, he also knew where it was at, too. And the liberals put him down, you know? And people, like, behind all the shows, like, he's good. Another thing, I don't understand why all Newsday cartoons are all anti-Reagan. Who do they want for president? And that's another thing about Newsday.
Yeah?
Who was that paper funded by? They had an article. Remember when the Soviet submarine hit the American ship?
Uh-huh.
And it said the headline was U.S. ship sideswipes Soviet sub, making it sound like it was in the wrong. And then with the article itself, it said that the sea law states that the the submarine is wrong if it's not, it's below water level, right? So they, right there, they contradict themselves. So they have like a communist headline.
A communist headline.
So I'm kind of disenchanted with them.
How about other papers?
I don't know. I don't trust the papers.
Okay, well, thanks for calling us.
Okay, take it easy.
Okay.
Bye.
246-7901 is our telephone number, area code 516. We're in the process of getting an outside line so that we can give this guy a call, Lyndon LaRouche, that is. I really haven't gotten a chance to tell you much about him. Actually, I kind of think maybe we should just let their people do the talking. We're going to be speaking to the National Campaign Director, whose name is Mel Klemetsky. Yeah, the campaign of Lyndon LaRouche. Let's see if I can find something of interest. There are all kinds of allegations being flung back and forth. He was on ABC a couple of nights ago, and he was saying some very nasty things about Henry Kissinger. I believe he was saying he was some sort of a Soviet spy or something. Something crazy. I talked to somebody from their office today, and they said they just hope that Kissinger sues them. They're very interested in that. Democratic Party presidential candidate, says here, Lyndon H. LaRouche Jr. has challenged the head of the National Broadcasting Company, Thornton Bradshaw, to schedule a live nationwide television debate between LaRouche and Bradshaw. I challenge Henry Kissinger's crony, Thornton Bradshaw, to face me on a national TV news feature to defend himself against his networks using libels cooked up by members of the drug pushers lobby, such as Chicago's Chip Burlett and New York's Dennis King, to conduct the dirtiest campaign against a Democratic candidate ever to appear in the television news media. What's the problem? Someone else is on the line? Kick him off.
Someone else will take care of it.
Ah, I see. Okay, fine. They know how to do it. They're gonna. Okay, fine. We're getting an outside line. That's what it boils down to. There's other stuff here. Oh, yes, there's other stuff. Mississippi farmer Billy Davis, named by Democratic presidential candidate Lyndon LaRouche as his agriculture, they spelled that wrong, agriculture, secretary-designate last week, linked the collapse of American agriculture to the same effects in the steel industry in a four-day tour of ravaged western Pennsylvania, completed yesterday. You know, for someone who's trying to get an outside line, they're not doing a good job.
Well, it's an expert at getting outside lines.
I see. Well, he's not getting anywhere, and we're running out of time. Thank you. I don't know what's going on here. This is crazy. Okay. LaRouche also filed suit for ballot status in North Carolina. The guy we're about to speak to now announced in the past that the candidate, Lyndon LaRouche, filed suit in Federal District Court, Eastern District of North Carolina in Raleigh, demanding a preliminary injunction to stop the printing of the Democratic presidential primary ballot until the name of Lyndon H. LaRouche Jr. is placed upon it. We'll be asking them about that, of course. North Carolina's State Board of Elections made a final determination on February 23rd to exclude LaRouche from the May 8th primary, asserting that since LaRouche had not been certified for federal matching funds, he does not measure up to the bona fides for ballot access. What's going on? They can't do it?
Mm-hmm.
I could probably do it here on the air, except I feel so... I'm going to try it once. Okay.
I did it 10 times.
Uh-huh. Well, all right. We're going to have to dial the expensive way because the university does not have their act together. Oh, my God, what a scandal this is going to be. Two. Oh, I can't say the number over the air now, can I? This person's waiting for us. Maybe it's the phone company. It's always good to blame the phone company for anything. It works all the time. Here we go. Like that ring, don't you? It's a ring with authority.
8820.
Hi, 8820. I'm looking for Mel Klemetsky, please.
Certainly. Hold on a minute.
Thank you.
Let me just put you on hold while I ascertain that he's at his desk.
Okay, I appreciate that. She's got a way with words, doesn't she? I like people who answer the phone with a phone number.
Hello?
Hello?
I just put you on hold. His line is busy. This is the radio station, right?
That's correct, yes. In fact,
hold on a minute, and I'll just get him to get off the line.
Okay. No need to use physical force, I don't think. Why are you writing these nasty words on a piece of paper? Fascist, racist, cult? Okay, I'll ask him if he's all those things, and more, maybe. I also have this book here. A whole book devoted to why this guy is not a nice person. Which I'll confront them with. Lyndon LaRouche. You can still call us. 246-7901, area code 516. Don't worry, I'll read the question over the air. When the time comes, I'll hit them. I'll surprise them with it. And if you do call us, you can just let the phone ring until we get off this call, and we'll go right to you. That way you don't have to pay anything for all the time that you're ringing. Especially if you're calling long distance. Area code 516-246-7901.
Hello?
Hi.
Okay, I have his line clear. Here goes.
Okay, thank you. Feels like an adventure, doesn't it?
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Klemetsky.
Yes.
Hi, this is Eric Corley from WUSB. We're live now.
Okay, fine. Very good.
Could you briefly tell us what this guy, Lyndon LaRouche, is all about, in whatever way you choose?
Okay, well, Mr. LaRouche is a presidential candidate. He just appeared in his fourth half an hour TV broadcast, pay TV broadcast, which went out on nationwide TV.
Uh-huh.
And in his first broadcast, Mr. LaRouche defined the strategic crisis that the country was facing. And proposed a National Defense Emergency Mobilization Act, which was a four-point program to deal with the strategic crisis.
What does that mean, emergency whatever?
Well, the main part of what Mr. LaRouche has been proposing is the BEAM, a $200 billion Apollo project toward the development of BEAM weapon systems. These are defensive weapon systems that would create a protective shield against incoming nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missiles. Ms. LaRouche had proposed this in February of 1982 as the way out of a potential superpower confrontation that has been looming and has been escalating. And on March 23rd, 1983, President Reagan put forward that same proposal in the form of something that he called a new strategic doctrine. He called it the doctrine of mutually assured survival. And in the subsequent weeks, after that March 23rd proposal, Reagan had, and Defense Secretary Weinberger had offered to the Soviet Union to jointly develop these technologies. The Soviets responded by a series of escalating attacks against the United States and the Western allies in the form of the downing of the Korean airliner,
mm-hmm.
And a series of escalating attacks in other areas using surrogates like the North Korean bombing in Burma of the entire South Korean cabinet, the bombing of the Marine compound in Beirut, which was backed by the Syrians, the Gaddafi invasion of Chad, and so on. We have seen, since that period, a series of escalations on the part of the Soviet Union, which are attempting to lead the United States into a strategic humiliation. There are certain people here in the United States who are playing an appeasement role in this overall operation. The Soviets would like to drive the
Wouldn't the United States like to do the same thing to the Soviet Union?
Drive Soviets out of the Middle East?
Out of the Middle East and out of Asia and out of Europe and wherever they are?
It depends on who you're talking about in the United States. If you're talking about Henry Kissinger, he has no intention of driving the Soviet Union out of anywhere.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. What is going on with Henry Kissinger here? I've heard all kinds of... What exactly did Mr. LaRouche say about Henry Kissinger that's causing all this uproar?
He said his Kissinger is a Soviet agent of influence.
Now, how do you know that?
Well, Miss Lewis went through an extensive documentation of this in his half-an-hour presentation. The Kissinger situation is actually quite clear. If you look at there have been certain back-channel agreements that were made in terms of the relationships between the superpowers. However, they were not made by the principal elected officials of the United States of America. In 1957-58, there was a series of agreements that were made at a Pugwash conference in Quebec. This Pugwash conference was a conference of Bertrand Russell and the co-thinkers of Bertrand Russell, and they proposed an offer to the Soviet Union, which became the doctrine of mutually assured destruction and the doctrine of flexible response. The offer was, what the Russell crowd wanted to do was to create a world federalist operation throughout the world. What they were proposing to the Soviet Union was to divide up the world into two empires, that they would monopolize the situation in the Western Empire, and they would give the Soviets the Eastern Empire. And they would make arrangements so that their game was to undermine the independent capabilities of the United States, which posed a threat to their concept of world federalism and their control over the Western Empire. They made a deal with, this was a deal that was made between Bertrand Russell and Khrushchev. It was signaled by the 1957 and 58 Pugwash conferences, and Kissinger and the New York Council of Foreign Relations, in a series of books, one book that Kissinger wrote on nuclear deterrence, signaled their acceptance of these Pugwash agreements. From that point on, every foreign policy that has been made up until March 23rd, 1983, has been a policy which has been initiated and constructed by these back-channel arrangements in the Pugwash group. Kissinger's role, for example, in the SALT I talks, in the SALT II negotiations, and the ABM treaty is exemplary. And currently, as a matter of fact, yesterday, Admiral Zumwalt was testifying in McClure's congressional hearings that Henry Kissinger had made back-channel deals, secret deals with the Soviet Union during those SALT I negotiations that the President of the United States was not briefed on, and indeed no one in Congress was briefed on. That kind of behavior, that particular example is one of many, many examples of Henry Kissinger's operations and activities.
Okay, I'd just like to say at this point, for our listeners' benefit, what our telephone number is. We're at area code 516-246-7901. You can either call us now or call us after we get off the phone. I'd like to read you something that I dug up about Mr. LaRouche, and you can tell me how it strikes you. Okay, this is from a pamphlet that's been floating around.
Wait a second before you read a pamphlet that's been floating around.
Okay.
Who gave you the pamphlet?
An anonymous person, but that's neither here nor there. You can tell me what you think of what I read after I read it, okay? This is something that's I can tell you who it's published by. It's published by the National Lawyers Guild. Okay?
Who gave it to you?
I can't tell you who gave it to me. That's not at all.
Was it a member of the National Lawyers
Guild? No, it was not. It was just an average, ordinary person on the street.
An average ordinary person around on the street runs around and gives little booklets to people who are
all the time. Yes,
having LaRouche on a show.
Yeah, sure.
Well, how did they know that the LaRouche campaign was going to be on your show?
Well, we don't keep things secret around here. We are a radio station, you know. Do you want to hear this?
Sure,
it's very interesting, and I just would like to know what. I mean, I'm certainly going to give you an opportunity
to
answer
this. I know what it is. I don't want to hear it.
Okay, well, for the benefit of our listeners, I'll read one paragraph from this. Okay? All right. Lyndon Hermeyer LaRouche, also known as Lynn Marcus, is the founder, leader, guru, father figure of NCLC, which is the National Caucus of Labor Committees. The 55-year-old LaRouche was born in Rochester, New Hampshire, the son of a Quaker family, which formed its own fundamental sect. One ex-NCLC member described him as some kind of mad genius. People who knew him well in the 1950s thought he was a genius who had a messiah complex. He always talked about phallus and castration. He presupposes phallus more than Freud does. Just as Hitler saw his destiny as ruler of the master race, LaRouche envisions a similar destiny for himself. He told the Washington Post in a February 17, 1974 interview that since the 1930s, I was resolved that no revolutionary movement was going to be brought into being in the USA unless I brought it into being. Now, have I said anything completely off the...
Well, let me just, you know, since you're playing this little game, let me just inform your listenership of what's going on.
Okay.
As you're reading from this National Lawyers Guild, you said Mr. LaRouche was 55 years old.
Uh-huh.
Right, Mr. LaRouche is now 62 years old. You're dealing with a pamphlet that was circulating 7 years ago.
Okay, 1977. You're right. It was published that year. But
just wait a minute. Just hold on.
Okay.
Mr. LaRouche has many, many powerful enemies throughout the world.
Such as?
Henry Kissinger, McGeorge Bundy, and the Soviet Union.
That's pretty powerful.
Just let me finish. In March 12th of this year, Mr. LaRouche was attacked in Izvestia, the Soviet Union. And because of his strong policy on and advocacy for the beam weapons, as a matter of fact, it is generally thought in Soviet circles that Mr. LaRouche is the author of the beam doctrine, which President Reagan adopted on March 23rd. Mr. LaRouche was also attacked in the JANA press, which is the press service of Gaddafi, because of his strong role in exposing the terrorist role and terrorist activity of the Soviet surrogate, Gaddafi. It's because of this situation that Mr. LaRouche has made a very, very strong request at this point for Secret Service protection. He is in the primary. He's raised over $1 million in matching funds. We just learned today that the Federal Election Commission has finally reversed its position of denying us matching funds and has given us several offers for the certification of our matching funds. Mr. LaRouche is a major candidate in the Democratic Party. He ran in 1980. He's running now in 1984. He has a candidates movement that he initiated, which now consists of 2,500 candidates throughout the country that are running on the LaRouche program. I started to describe that LaRouche program. It's a national defense emergency mobilization. It's a four-point program. The main part of this program is to push forward a $200 billion Apollo-style program for the development of beam weapons, because these are defensive weapon systems that can end the threat of thermonuclear war once and for all. The other aspect of this program, which is important, is in order to achieve that kind of level of economic mobilization in the country, we need an economic revival modeled on the same kind of economic revival that occurred in this country from the 1939 to 1944 period, the period of FDR. That was a war mobilization. This time around, instead of for war, we would see the depression that this country faces reversed overnight by this kind of economic mobilization, but this time around it would be for the development of these defensive weapon systems. The other thing which is important is, in order to provide the credit for this kind of mobilization, what we would have to do is something that Mr. LaRouche calls federalizing the Federal Reserve. We have to reverse the high interest rate policies of Paul Volcker, which have brought this country down to its knees, and provide the kind of low interest rate credit that's necessary to get industry and agriculture going once again. And so what we would do is we would federalize the Federal Reserve, which means taking the power of issuing credit out of the hands of the Federal Reserve, which is unconstitutional to begin with. It's in violation of Section 8 and 9, Article 1 of the Federal Constitution, and place it once again back in the hands of Congress. Congress would issue $500 billion worth of gold-backed treasury notes, targeted at low interest rates, at 2 to 4% interest rates, targeted toward the private banking sector in order to be loaned into private industry and agriculture to get our idle factories and farms moving once again. The other important points of Mr. LaRouche's program, that would provide the credit to get the thing moving. The $200 billion BEAM program would create millions of new jobs. It would create 1.5 million new jobs. Additionally, you need to build up, to have a crash program to build up the current strategic capabilities of the United States, because the Soviets have gained advantages over the past 15 years. The fourth point is that we have to reverse the policies which are now coming down and bringing the entire world financial system to the brink of collapse. We have to strengthen our allies in the third world, in the underdeveloped sector, by renegotiating the debt. There's a massive amount of debt that exists between in the third world, which has over $1 trillion worth of debt, in the United States, which has $5 trillion worth of debt or more, in Western Europe, which has over $5 trillion worth of debt. And this debt is threatening to come collapsing down and bring down the entire world financial system. In order to, this creates a tremendous amount of economic instability and a tremendous amount of political instability, especially in the third world. And in order to strengthen our allies and friends in the third world and other countries and nations around the world, we have to create a situation where we are renegotiating that debt, we're exchanging the short-term debt at high interest rates for long-term renegotiated debt at low interest rates. We have to have a credit policy, an export policy toward the third world, which exchanges our technology for the oil of Mexico, for the raw materials of the third world. And by doing that, through commerce and trade, we are creating the conditions for developing stability in the third world and for strengthening our friends and allies in the third world. This applies to nations like Israel and to areas like the Middle East, where the indebtedness of Israel is creating tremendous problems for the Israeli government at this point, and tremendous problems for other nations throughout the world. So this combined four-point program is the policy that Mr. LaRouche is putting forward, the policy that more than 2,500 LaRouche Democrats are running on throughout the country, and the policy upon which many of them have scored victories in Illinois, in Florida, in Boston, in the recent round of elections.
Okay, I'm going to have to interrupt you for a moment here. We're running out of time. I just wanted to ask you a couple of other questions for the benefit of our listeners. I've been told by a couple of different sources of information that Mr. LaRouche is...
Well, the sources that you're told by are a bunch of gossipers. You should find
how do you,
out...
How do you know what I'm going to say?
The KGB.
How do you know what I'm...
represent the interest sir? Of the same forces that are slamming LaRouche in Asbestia and in...
Is anyone saying anything good about him? I mean, I didn't tell you who I was going to read from, and you're convinced I'm going to say something bad about him.
Well, you just read a quote from 7 years ago from the National Lawyers Guild.
Okay, well...
John, it's pretty obvious what kind of material has been presented to you by people on the streets who just happen to hand you little articles.
I've gotten material from your office. I've read that. I've read this material. I'm trying to present some sort of an equal dialogue here. I've let you go on for about 10 minutes now about what's right about Mr. LaRouche. Now, I want to ask you a question or two about him.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, now...
Just tell me which sources you're quoting, which KGB and which Gaddafi sources you're quoting, that's all.
Well, I don't...
mention the National Lawyers Guild.
Okay, this is a publication called The Public Eye, a journal of social and political issues. All right, this is published several years ago. I don't have a year on it here. It says, though, that Mr. LaRouche is convinced that there are governments and organizations out to kill him. Is that correct?
Well, I just described the situation with the Jana Press and Asbestia.
Are they out to kill him?
Oh. What?
Are they out to murder this person? And if so, why? What kind of threat does he pose to them?
Well, I just described the situation. Mr. LaRouche is considered the author of the Beam policy, which the Soviets are opposed to, because they are bent. They are afraid that if the United States were to develop beam weapon systems, their hope of the United States falling into, collapsing into a post-industrial malaise, losing its strategic advantage in the world, and its strategic strategic importance and its superpower. Their hope of becoming, you know, a third Rome, a Russian empire once again, will be destroyed. They had made a deal with the Pugwash crowd in 1958. Part of the Pugwash operation was to undermine the independent strength of the United States through convincing the United States to put itself through a post-industrial, to give up its industrial strength and become a post-industrial society. That has been the conscious policy of people like McGeorge Bundy, people like Bob McNamara, people like Averell Harriman, and people like Henry Kissinger. And that has resulted in a radical restructuring of the U.S. economy throughout the 1970s, leading into the late 1970s, where the high interest rate policies of Paul Volcker became the finishing touches of radically restructuring the U.S. economy, transforming it from an industrial and agricultural power into a real estate playground.
Okay,
that is a policy which the Soviets are hoping will be completed in the 1980s, and they will emerge in the 1980s, in the 1990s, as the preeminent superpower in the world.
Okay.
They are fearful that if we go forward with a BEAM program, that program will lead to an industrial revival, a renaissance in the United States, which will create the conditions where the United States will once again regain its industrial strength, like it did.
Okay, we're running over. I have to interrupt you here. I just have one more question for you, then we're going to have to go, and that is, where do you find you're getting most of your financial support from?
Well, as I say, Mr. LaRouche was just given SEC matching funds. Our support, we've raised over $1 million. Our support comes from small contributors, more than 5,000 small contributors throughout the United States. That is the basis of the LaRouche campaign support. That is the basis of the 4 half-an-hour TV shows and so on. We have more grassroots support than any other candidate. We raised more money in the first 2 months of this year than Gary Hart. We intend in the Pennsylvania primary, which is the first of a series of primaries that Mr. LaRouche is in, to demonstrate that support with a 20% of the vote minimum, and we're shooting for 65% of the vote. We expect that to be our range at this point.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for talking to us, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from you folks in the future. Perhaps we'll have you on again.
Okay, send my regards to your friends, Eric.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
I guess I'm marked down for a commie now. Oh, boy. Well, if anyone has any quick comments, I know I'm running over here, but this is such an interesting thing here. 2467901, you got about 10 seconds to call up and give me a comment. If you don't do it, I'm going to say goodbye and all that kind of stuff. I don't know when we'll be on again with this program, The Ministry of Truth. We'll be on Thursday nights. I don't know which Thursday nights we'll be on, but hopefully it will be soon. Maybe it'll be next week, maybe 2 weeks from now. It's kind of hard to say at the moment. It is 7:01, 2 degrees. I guess we are going to have to wrap this thing up. We were speaking to Mel Klemetsky, who was the campaign manager for the Lyndon LaRouche campaign, who is certainly a very interesting person. All right, we do have a call. I'm going to make this very fast. USB, you're on the air.
Hello, USB.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I'm going to comment about that LaRouche thing.
Okay, go ahead.
This guy is a neo-patriot. He's a wacko. He's been around for 20, 30 years. He writes a small article. It's a magazine.
Uh-huh.
What the hell's the name? Freedom Press. He's almost like a socialist, this man.
Except he seems to be very anti-socialist.
Well, he's got socialist tendencies. But yet he's a neo, what I would say, how to describe him? He's a neo-right-wing. He's so right-wing, he's at the tip of the right-wing.
Uh-huh. It's like a circle, you're saying.
Right. In fact, he's so right-wing, you know, if it's up to him, he'd have every stinking country in the world as the way we live. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a super capitalist countries.
A McDonald's in every country.
That's right. That's the way he thinks.
Where are you calling from, sir?
Mastic Beach.
Okay, well, thank you very much for calling us.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye. With that, we'll bring to the end this first edition of The Ministry of Truth, and hopefully we'll have all kinds of other interesting people to talk to. I want to thank everybody for calling us and for saying all kinds of nice things. I'm Eric Orley. Until next time, good evening.
The Ministry of Truth.